Hey there, it's Dane Reinhardt bringing you the President's Perspective, a conversation between current and future leaders of NAHU. With us today is our esteemed guest, Aaron Davis of Switchbridge. Aaron has a good tenure in the health and employee benefits business. I'll let him tell his story. But I've known Aaron for, I wouldn't say that we're not super close, but I've known you professionally for probably 10 or more years. I feel like the time we got together for lunch might have been as many as 10 years ago. And Aaron has been the money ball person of health and employee benefits before analytics were really something that we were talking about as an industry. And he's one of the brightest minds I've met. Aaron, along the way of forming Switchbridge, also was a broker, so he can speak the language of being the broker, and has since sold his practice and gone out to launch Switchbridge full-time as the founding member and CEO, I presume, of Switchbridge. It's really an honor to be with you. And if you would just give us an idea of your story in the business and how you got from where you were to Switchbridge, if you would.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. And first of all, thanks for having me on, Dane. It's great to see you again. And I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you a little bit. You know, my story, I guess, in a nutshell, I went into college pre-med, ended up taking a lot of IT while I was
Does
there.
Does that mean your parents are really disappointed?
They are very disappointed.
My not mom only always wanted me to get a real job.
Not only for that reason, though, there are many other reasons for them to be disappointed, but that's one of them. It's one of the leading disappointments. But yeah, so I took a lot of that and I switched over halfway through college and came out poli-sci pre-law with a minor in business. And my first job out of college was running IT for an HMO in Miami, Florida. And then I was promoted there to assistant director of operations for that HMO up in Philly. So I had this healthcare interest. I had this IT background, and then I kind of combined the two over time. And so I went from that firm, loved my time there, but I wanted to get back to this area, the Baltimore area. And I took a job with Cigna Health Plan Mid-Atlantic and went into sales. So I went into Cigna, stayed there for about 5 years, worked for a couple of other local firms, moved into the TPA world. Ended up forming a company with a great guy by the name of Denny Mather. Denny then sold a benefit mall. I left there to form a broker firm called Next Logical Benefit Strategies in 2000. And what was different about that was it always intrigued me that because I'd worked with brokers supporting them for so many years at Cigna and the TPAs, that nobody had any healthcare experience, right? So we were all health insurance people, but we really didn't understand the driver of health insurance. Health insurance is expensive because healthcare is expensive and getting more expensive every day. And people are demanding more healthcare than ever before. So that was really the driver, but we didn't have anyone kind of on our side of the table or on the client side of the table saying, you know, let's talk about this from a healthcare standpoint. So early on at Next Logical, we hired a team of clinicians. We had nurses, a phenomenal nurse that ran most of our operations, but we had a couple others and wellness plan people, health coaches, MDs, PharmDs, et cetera, that would help us analyze what was going on in health plans. And along that line, we started using some analytics tools. So what we did was we would do deep dives into the data whenever we could get it, fully insured clients and self-funded clients. We'd pull their data into these analytics tools and then try and identify people who were at risk of driving future claims, either because they had a condition that they weren't managing well, or maybe they hadn't even been to a doctor to be diagnosed early. So we started doing that, and we created a couple proprietary approaches through that we used in our broker firm. It was very successful. We had clients that went many, many, many years with incredibly low rate increases, but it was because the health risks in the population were being managed. And so we collaborated with the carriers and TPAs and so forth. And what we would do is identify people who we thought were high risk people. And then we would make sure that the carrier was engaging them in medical management programs. And that was something we called medical management optimization. And then we did a lot of other things along those lines. But because we captured the data independently and analyzed it independently, we were then able to go back and make sure that everything was happening as it should have been, especially in the area of population health management. So I had enough foresight at the time to understand that the analytic tools that were really doing the job back in 2008, 2010, et cetera, were not going to be the best tools in the future, that new tools were going to be developed. And some of them were going to be very condition specific. And so Switchbridge was created to ingest data into a massive HIPAA secure data warehouse and normalize that data and then allow it to be used with multiple analytics. So if a client were to change carriers or what have you, PBMs, et cetera, we just remap the data in and we map it out on the back end to the analytics tools, a series of tools or point solutions as they're called today. And then we would remap the output of those analytic tools or point solutions back in so none of the data leaked out. And that's really the how SwitchBridge came to be and sort of what we're doing today.
Yeah, and then you've bolted on technology to it as well, which goes to the employer and also down to the member level, right?
Exactly. So not only do we support brokers, because one of the things that became evident as these analytic tools became more and more advanced was that brokers, many of them were finding themselves without the expertise to really bring out of those tools everything that they should. And some of the tools are pretty good. I mean, some of the tools that are out there, we use a bunch of them, but some of the tools are really good at providing very specific insights. But other tools, they found themselves struggling with, and especially when they got to anything clinical. And if you think about it, a lot of the recommendations that come out of these tools are very clinical recommendations. They might be, you know, looking at specific low clinical value drugs or looking at different programs, you know, software as a medical device, SAMD type services that the client or the broker might want to consider. So at the end of the day, we brought these clinical capabilities along with the data analytics to help brokers just provide better services to their clients to help them save money. And then ultimately, if you can't get a member or of a health plan to do something differently, I mean, what have you really achieved? We tried to put in place a number of data activation services. We have an app that we built from scratch called Wealth, W-E-L-L-T-H, Wellness and Health, Wellbeing and Health. And then we have a portal called Wealth Cloud. So we can drop benefit information, benefit plan information, contact information, health data right down into this HIPAA secure app so that people can carry that around with them, but also access information or tools that might be relevant for them to help them manage their diabetes or their hypertension or what have you. And then it also helps them communicate with clinicians when they need help and support.
So first question is, how the heck did you get the data on the fully insured side? How did you get the carriers to release it when most of us in the same market were having a time getting it? I'm sure it was sort of a chicken and the egg. You were able to prove outcomes, but you couldn't get the data without the proof. But yet somewhere along the way, you had to get the first opportunity. Because I would imagine some of our listeners are going to be like, well, how the heck did he get it on fully insured way back when?
First of all, I think we were very fortunate that we were dealing with management teams at the time, especially I'll share this in our market with CareFirst, who was very forward thinking and understood that what-
To be clear, that's the blue in the Baltimore, DC area, just for those listening.
And what they understood us to be doing was helping them cover that last mile between what should have been done in the health plan and the member, right? So if you think about where population health management fails, and I believe that population health management, when done correctly, is the most effective thing that we can have working within these programs. Now, there are a lot of other things. I mean, how do you source, you know, drugs? Can you save money there? Can you get better contracts? Can you, you know, improve your PBM contracts and so forth? Yes, you can do all of that. But at the end of the day, when you're trying to affect what's happening with a member, which is getting them diagnosed early, making sure they're compliant with their treatment plans, getting them healthier or even cured in many cases, then that's really where things like condition management, disease management, coaching, advocacy, that all comes into play. It's really helping those members navigate the healthcare system. So what some of these carriers started to understand was they were having trouble getting in touch with and engaging members. Well, we said to them, well, we've got clinicians and we know these employees and we're out there in front of them all the time. We might do wellness programs or lunch and learns or be there at open enrollment, but we would have clinicians in front of members very frequently. So they knew who we were. And so we kind of covered that last mile between what the carrier was trying to do and getting the member to trust them, that when this nurse calls you at 6 o'clock at night, she's not trying to reduce your benefit. She's trying to really help you find, you know, the right care from the right provider in the right setting at the right time, the right price and all that. Those are the things they were trying to do, but they're trying to help you. And so I think because we had that collaborative approach with the carriers that they said, yeah, we'll share some data with you and let's see how this works. And it worked incredibly well. And it continues. What you touched on before, though, is one of the biggest challenges that we all face today. I mean, we have dozens and dozens and dozens of data feeds that come into us every month from virtually every major carrier out there, TPAs, PBMs, et cetera, and we add new ones all the time. And the challenge is that everyone has a different non-disclosure agreement, data use agreement, you know, BAAs, and I mean, they come up with new agreements all the time. So this issue, Dane, that you've touched on is absolutely essential, which is who owns the data? And even if you can't win the battle of who owns the data, at least you ought to be winning the battle of data use. So our tagline is map it, own it, use it, right? So map the data, own the data, use the data, and then repeat that because we're going to keep ingesting new data all the time. So we're working with, I'll give them a plug right now because one of the best law firms I've ever worked with is Smith and Downey out of Towson, employee benefits and ERISA experts. And we work with them for years and coming up with language that we believe brokers and consultants need to be putting into contracts with the carriers. So when you go to RFP, you're going to say, you're going to tell us right now that this is the client's data. I mean, it's their employees and their employees' claims data. And they're the only ones here at the table with a long-term vested interest in how these people receive care, what the costs are. You know, carriers can jump out every year, right? Employer can't jump out. So we want to settle the data ownership issue if we can. And then if we can't, at least solve the data use issue, which is under HIPAA and signing the appropriate business associate agreements, that data can be securely transmitted to these powerful tools that are available in the marketplace.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is one of the reasons you were able to have done what you did as a broker is that you had clinical people on staff that 99.9% of the brokers out there didn't have on staff that were doing that analytics before people were doing that kind of thing. So it changed the conversation dynamics between a carrier and the rest of us out there that would want to be having that conversation because we didn't really have any data to give them if we didn't have the clinical staff that you had. But as you know, the way I look at it is because you've done that and now with SwitchBridge, you're in essence saying all the things that I did in concept as a broker, I've now enhanced the analytic tools and I'm making available to brokers. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the most important positionings in the market, as I understand it, and I like the idea of positioning it this way, is as your broker consultant, I will help you own your data. And I think if you could speak to one of the things that I think is really critical to the value of SwitchBridge is the medical management transition that I think a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah.
And I think if you could sort of explain what medical management transition is, what you and I are calling it with each other, because somebody else may call it something else and they're like, it's the this. And then how that's important, because even if you're self-funded, moving from either carrier, you know, a bundled model or unbundled between stop loss carriers, that the importance of having that medical management transition.
Yeah, well, if we go back to the idea that population health management, medical management is critically important, not only to help improve the quality of care that members receive, but also to help control costs. If you go back to that premise, then one of the things that virtually all employers, and frankly, most brokers and consultants don't really think through is when you change a carrier or a medical manager, you are disrupting that whole relationship between the nurse and the member. People that may be in the process of receiving very intensive treatment for major conditions. So what we did was because we have the data in SwitchBridge and we run that against different analytics tools, like a Springbuck type tool or a Novu or Vital Insight or SIR, you know, tools like VST, because we run it, we also have the input, you know, coming back from those tools or output from them, input back to us. So we know who's risky and who has gaps in care and so forth. What we're able to do then is if one of our broker partners is moving a client from one carrier to another or one TPA to another, we can take that data and feed that to the new carrier so that they continue doing population health management the day they take over. And I've talked to senior executives at carriers and they've said to me, Aaron, that is so helpful to us because if we take on a new group and we're looking at claims, it can take us 3 months, 6 months, sometimes a year to figure out who's risky in the population because non-compliant people who can often be your riskiest people in the group, they're going along not taking care of their conditions and they have an exacerbation of the disease, right? Something major. If they're non-compliant, then they're not submitting claims and the carrier doesn't even know they exist. So we pull that data from the former carrier that we have and the risk data that we have, and make sure that that new vendor is working on those folks even before the effective date. So they're ready to go and the members don't experience this loss of support, which is very, it can be very traumatic for them.
One of the other things I was fascinated with that we talked about before was some of the carve-out tools you were talking about and some of the data leakage. Yeah. Can you speak of that a little?
Yeah. So one of the things we've always been concerned about is when clinical data sort of leaks out of the system. This is important data for doing anything from basic reporting to advanced analytics to stop loss filing to population health management again. And so what has become very, very popular, and we've, you know, had enough foresight to know that this was coming, was there is just an abundance of phenomenal tools out there that are doing very specific things with data. In some cases, however, let's use a case of international drug sourcing, for example, which can save a lot of money. But if a broker puts that tool in, then what often happens is the members start filling drugs through that alternative channel. Well, that data then doesn't come back into the PBM. It doesn't come back to the TPA, or it doesn't go to the stop loss carrier. And so you're missing it for reporting. You could be missing stop loss submissions to get reimbursed for some of those high cost drugs that are being used. It's certainly going to mess up your data analytics if that data isn't re-ingested back into the system, so that now the analytics are saying, oh, this member is now non-compliant. They're not taking these meds that they were taking before. Well, the truth is they just have a new channel for purchase. And then population health management is thinking the same thing, that we've got a member who either doesn't understand their condition or the importance of taking these meds. And that can happen with a number of different tools that are available, these point solutions. So what we do is we work with these companies, and we've got companies that are doing home infusion, and they're doing dialysis contracting, and they're doing the international drug sourcing. I mean, you just name it. It's just tons of different tools. But we then re-ingest the output from those tools, so it comes back into the data warehouse and can be channeled to the people that need it. And those could be the medical management folks. It could be the TPA. It could be the stop loss carrier. It could be the broker. It could be just going back into the employer's reporting system, or it could be going right to the member. So we just rechannel that data in. So instead of that data that's really critical leaking out of the system and just going into these silos where they sit, you know, and no one taps into them, we bring that all back together so you have this complete picture of the member and what's happening.
It would be fascinating if somewhere along the way, as you continue this journey with growing SwitchBridge, as things like GoodRx continue to evolve and things like that run outside the health plan, if there's a way to get that data somehow, because that's, as you know, it's not part of a population necessarily. It's just a voluntary go on your own discount.
Yeah, and that's a phenomenal idea. But one of the things we also allow is within the app or within the portal, members can tell us what conditions they have, what meds they're on, vaccines that they've gotten, you know, all their immunizations, supplements they're on, all of that. Anything that a member puts into our app or into our portal then gets sent right back up into SwitchBridge and is reported as self-reported data.
How do you get, I mean, we all know that on these carrier things when they're trying to promote, hey, you know, we all know that the blue in our space has a healthy reward program and they're basically giving money away if you do some basic stuff. And the compliance rate, even on that for free money, isn't terribly high. Because I think as we evolve as a healthcare economy, that voluntary data is going to be more important that we gather. Because I think people will have outlets to go outside of a health plan to get some other care, or even in the event that somebody's transitioning, say, off of one spouse's plan onto the employer's plan, and they had some other things done previously that wouldn't have been captured. How do you see a world where we could get that data on a voluntary basis added? Is there an approach you've seen that's effective?
Yeah, I think first of all, we're going to see it hopefully legislated, so that this idea that the carrier owns all of the data or somebody owns it, we'll find ways to make that more portable, so that if I leave one company, I can port my data and take it somewhere else with me and do that download and upload.
Even down to the GoodRx companies, you just extract your own data.
Yeah. So until then, what we do is we allow them to give us that data through the portal, and we incentivize a lot of that through what I would call clinically efficacious wellness plans. I'm a huge proponent of standard-based wellness plans, always have been. But the problem with most of them is that most wellness plans reward healthy people, which is great. And I think companies ought to do that. So then instead of healthy people saying, what am I getting for all this money I'm paying in my employee contributions and trying to find ways to use the health plan, that they do get something out of it through the wellness plan. So I think wellness plans are great. What I think needs to be added, and we've done this for many, many years, is an approach that also engages people who are sick. We worked with, and I mentioned before, Smith and Downey years ago, and we created a thing called Gap Reduction Wellness. And so what we did is we installed this with several clients so that people who had gaps in care could work to close those gaps over some period of time, like 6 months or 9 months. And as they did successfully, we would see that in the data. And then what we would do then is reward them through employee contribution savings or reductions. I mean, you could do anything. You could put it into, you know, reward programs and so forth. But we would do that so that those people who maybe weren't able to get up and go walk 10,000 steps a day because of their illness could still find ways to participate. And what they were doing was doing those things that were essential to the proper treatment of their condition. So incentives are really important. We've all known that extrinsic incentives are really important until somebody has that life event that causes them to be intrinsically motivated, right?
It's truly the engagement piece of it. There's so many things that can be done, but it's really getting the employees motivated to have that level of engagement that is critical to capturing that data. Literally, I could do this for a couple more hours, but I'm going to wrap us up with a general question you brought up. Until we have some legislation about being able to own your own medical data on the member level, to being able to extract it from whatever sources you have it. Our members, one of the reasons they're involved and remain members on an ongoing basis is they're incredibly interested in the government affairs and regulatory process. Mm-hmm. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I'm just curious to hear your thoughts as somebody who's building a company and has been. With this change in administration, our members are all aware of the discussion about the public option and potentially single payer. We've seen states like Washington that have put in a public option. The one that's in Washington, fortunately, because of our members and people like them got involved early, it really isn't at the moment a threat to the employer model of distribution for healthcare from the millions of Americans that get it. And then you start getting into, this is me with my crystal ball, the congressional parliamentarian just ruled that budget reconciliation could be used again this year. And that could be used to push through this infrastructure bill that it has a big component that's healthcare. And it's, I think it's slated at, scored at like 1.7, 1.9 trillion.
Yeah.
And a big piece of that's healthcare. And in that is another spend that is alleged to be offset partially by increases in corporate tax rates. But you add that on to all the coronavirus relief bills. And this is, again, Dane looking at the world in a very simplistic view. But if you start adding the trillions, that's with T's, that we've done over the last, you know, 14, 18, 16 months, it's lots of trillions that we had never spent before. And it's like, okay, at what point are our children and their children going to be the ones stuck holding the bag on this thing? So one obvious place to me is the employer exclusion. I believe, and I think many of our members are concerned about, is that going to go away and or be capped? The employer exclusion for the cost of an employee's health benefits are not subject to taxation and they're deductible to the employer up to unlimited amounts. So if you start looking at these worlds converging with single payer public option, employer exclusions, cap or, you know, removal, those kinds of things, how do you, just in the world of Aaron Davis, see that impacting the broker consultant model, switch bridge model? However, if that world changed, one could argue the employer model becomes less viable. So have you gone down the mental thinking process of that? And where did you end up, if so?
So there's a lot there to
Yeah, I'm sorry, notorious for the 8 minute question.
So first of all, I think we have to come to the conclusion in this country that far more than a health insurance problem, we have a healthcare problem. As I said before, you know, health insurance is expensive because healthcare is expensive. People are demanding more and more. Some of the unfortunate things that happened because of ACA One of the more unfortunate things was the removal of annual and lifetime maximums. Now, if you go back and you look how many million-dollar claims were there before that was passed, there were very, very few, and they all got covered. But we opened up the door with unlimited expenses to drugs like Zolgensma, I think is $2.6 million, or Soliris, that's $700,000. Or, you know, there's lists of these meds that are quite honestly threatening to bankrupt plans. So I think we need to do a better job of, if the government has a role, they should step in and try and protect the companies that get unlucky enough that they have someone with those conditions. Because as all of your listeners know, they're either going to be subject to a big increase next year in their fully insured plan, or potentially laser underwriting on their specific stop loss.
One of the carriers has actually put in a global tax on all their members on a PEPM to avoid that, which is sort of a global community thing, which is an interesting approach to circumventing that $2.6 million pharmacy claims.
I spoke at I think it was a SIA conference many years ago, probably in the early to mid 2000s, and it was a room full of stop loss people. And I said, if you guys don't get your hands around laser underwriting, you know, you're going to regret it someday. But we do need massive pools. Everybody puts in a little bit of money to handle these massive claims when they come up, because now employers and brokers are having to get really creative at how do we not have this massive drug that could bankrupt our health plan. So I think part of it is that, you know, most favored nation status with drug purchasing has to be done. And look, we've had a healthcare system which allows people to get the highest quality healthcare regardless of their ability to pay or their accountability or anything else. It's sort of the only market like it. I can't go out and buy any house I want or any car I want or whatever. And it has no relation whatsoever to how responsible or accountable that I'm being. And we have limited information as buyers and consumers. So there are a lot of problems that need to be solved first. Taking this out of the private market and creating government programs is absolutely not the answer. I mean, everybody used to joke about the Postal Service, and I feel bad for those people. My grandfather was a postal worker, worked very, very hard. But boy, look at what happened recently with that. More bureaucracy and government-run healthcare is not the answer. I hope that doesn't happen during our lifetimes, but we have the ability to pull the right levers. But we do have, I think government intervention has a role in reducing some of these outrageous costs for some procedures. But I think we do have to go back to personal accountability. Now, people get sick. In 2000, I had my very healthy, lovely wife was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she was as healthy as you could imagine. And then she passed away in 2002 from it. People get really sick because of their genetics or just bad luck. But I think we have to have a philosophy that's very compassionate as well. So those are big questions. Those are above my pay grade, Dane. But
yeah, well, I thought our members might want to hear. Before we wrap up, can you just let our listeners know where they can find you, whether you're on social media and or links to websites or those kinds of things?
I mean, the best way to reach me is just adavis@switchbridge.com. That's the best way. So I'm out there.
Do you do much on social media? Do you post much or no? The Switchbridge out there?
Not a lot. I did a lot in the past. I need to do more, but we've been growing rapidly. As you mentioned, I sold my broker firm. I just left the company that bought us. I left them at the end of February to focus full-time on Switchbridge.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.